We got the antidote, and then we got Ruined My Life with Derek. I guess this is a good gauge of what the record's going to be like as a body of work?
There's a desire to come back to the roots and modernize, you know, what pop punk means to us, you know?
Sure.
So that definitely showcases what, you know, this record's going to be all about. There's also, you know, like different genres of music that, you know, that we're trying out with the record. But I think it was important for us to throw back, you know, to the genre.
Yeah.
Especially now that this genre is kind of like super popular because of, you know, Machine Gun Kelly,
yeah,
Olivia Rodrigo. So it's an interesting time right now. So a lot of people are exposed, you know, younger people are exposed to that genre,
yeah,
that we've always been doing. And again, our wish is just to keep doing the music that we love, doing it so it sounds modern and evolving, you know, with every record, but at the same time,
staying true. Yeah.
To the essence of the band.
And it was also, I think, a conscious effort to put those songs forward first to make sure that our fan base knows, like, because in the past, I think sometimes we've picked some singles. I think of like our third record, we came out with a song, When I'm Gone, that was very, very different. And that was the first single people heard. And a lot of the fans were upset. They're like, what the hell? It sounds so different. And we're like, no, don't worry. There's a whole bunch of the stuff on the record that sounds like Simple Plan, but then you're
explaining yourself.
But it's already too late, you know. Yeah. We felt like this time around, with some maturity and some experience, we're like, let's make sure we put some of the songs here that people are like, oh my god, I love Simple Plan because it sounds like Simple Plan and I love it. And also, we've learned to embrace that as well, because we as musicians and songwriters, we have enough talent to write many types of different records, you know. And I love different types of music. I love, you know, reggae. I love stuff that's more dancey, more pop, more alternative, more this and that, more country.
Yeah.
But I think that we've come to the realization after a while that people love Simple Plan for what they fell in love with Simple Plan to begin with, you know, and let's just give them that. It's limiting in some ways, but if you can learn to embrace it and just, it's kind of like you're, it's what you've built, you know?
I've always liked this band, of course, because you're, you know, you're hometown heroes, but I've always respected what you guys have achieved outside, worldwide, and I've never, ever been jealous of this band except for once. You guys got to do the f***ing Scooby-Doo theme.
Yeah.
How did that come about? And tell, please, I want to know. Scooby-Doo, like, why? And how? And I hate you.
We got lucky.
We got really lucky. There was a time when, you know, we got pitched like a bunch of soundtracks, and but when the Scooby-Doo thing came about, it was amazing. Not only that we did the soundtrack, but we also appeared in an episode.
Right.
So it was all like, I remember like being like fully French Canadian and having like a big thick accent, you know. And still to this day, you know, our fans request that we play the song live.
Do you play it live?
Yeah,
sometimes?
For sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And we didn't play it for the longest time, and with the whole train of thought, we realized that like you need to embrace the things that made you who you are, you know. And a lot of people discovered Simple Plan from that theme song, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And some people still don't even know that it is us. And I'm like, we're that band. Like, what? Are you kidding me?
What's crazy now is we have kids, and like I showed it to my kid, and he's like, well, hold on. Like, you play this song, and it's like his favorite song, and it's like it introduces a whole bunch of people to the band, and it's just one of those iconic thing, like franchise that's going to be around forever.
Pierre, you've been really active with Jacoby. I saw a lot of stuff with the two of you on social media. Was that a friendship that had been forged for a long time?
Yes. So they're one of the bands that we met kind of the earliest in our career. We were in Germany at some point, and we heard that Papa Roach was in town, and through promoter, and this is like 2003 or 4, something
like that.
Our
first trip, 2002 actually.
Yeah, so really, really early on, and they were in town, and I can't remember how it happened, but they were like, we want to go have dinner with Papa Roach, and of course we do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we grew up with 99.9 The Buzz over here in Montreal playing like, cut my life into pieces.
Yeah.
So we're really into that. So we ended up going to the restaurant with them at a Thai place, and we had some drinks together. And we just had a great time. And then since then, we've crossed paths in various festivals and things around the world and have always maintained that friendship. And now we had an opportunity to do some shows together.
Mm.
And they've recognized that we also have embraced social media and TikTok and Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And they've done, like you said, he's a real beast on there.
Yeah.
So we did a show with them for TikTok, and they were
October.
Yeah, they were asked, who do you want to do something with, you know, because they were really big on TikTok.
Yeah.
Who do you want to bring in? And they saw our numbers and remembered, like, oh, we're friends with them. And also Tony Palermo, who's their drummer now.
Tony's the best.
Yeah, he was a drummer for 10 Foot Pole back on my first tour with Chuck when we were 17 years old.
Yeah.
Tony was a drummer. We went across Canada with him. So we've been friends for a long time. And they called us in on that, and ever since then we've reconnected, and we're playing some shows in Mexico next month, in a little bit. But it's been awesome, and he's a super cool guy and very genuine, and it's always a fun time hanging out with those guys. And it's also our first time going on tour with Sum 41. If it goes well, let's take it around the world. You know what I mean? Let's take this thing back to Canada and everywhere else, because, I mean, a lot of fans when we were starting, you know, and throughout our careers, we've seen a lot of Sum 41 shirts at our shows, and I'm sure they've seen a lot of Simple Plan shirts at our shows.
So was there ever an issue with you guys?
There was a bit of a beef.
So there's a beef.
Yeah, there was a beef, and it was so silly, and it lasted for a few years, and like 10 years later, we kind of made up at the Much Music Awards, and we're not a band. We're not a scruff. We don't like to. We're not a scrapper band. You know, we don't like to start fights.
Right.
Sum 41 has a little more of that reputation, but
but
there was, you know, a stupid issue about like. There was a miscommunication. It was a lost in translation thing, and they thought we said something about them, and then it said something about us.
Right.
And it was during those days, and it just made no sense. And after a while, we were at the Much Music Awards, and I saw Steve-O in the hallway, and I was like, oh, shit, here it goes. And he was like, hey, man, I just want to say this whole beef's been so ridiculous. I'm like, yes, exactly. We have side-by-side careers for 20 years.
Yeah, totally.
And we grew up, you know, a few hours away from each other. We play the same kind of music.
Right.
We should get together. And now, finally, this is happening.
And I think when both bands last 20 years and, like, I think their record is turning 21 years older, right. All Killer, No Filler.
Yeah.
Ours is going to be 20 years in March. I think when, you know, there's – game recognizes game, you know, like, now we're friends and it's gonna be really exciting to do this tour. I think fans are gonna, it's a once in a lifetime, you know, it's never happened again. And we're gonna do the albums and everything. So it's gonna be really a special night for us and for the fans, hopefully.
Do you think some of those old feelings will come out when you're on stage, when you're like, okay, good luck going on after us?
I think there's always
Zico grabbed the mic. He's got something to say.
There's always a pleasant sort of like a friendly competition. You want to outplay everybody else. But I think there's also an awesome sort of spirit of community in the pop punk fans, kind of built from Warped Tour. You know, Warped Tour is really where all these bands kind of were able to develop. And that tour is a tour where everyone's equal. Everyone gets half an hour sets. Yep. There's no headliners. We all eat the same place.
You get zero ego.
You get the schedule that morning. You might play at noon or you might play at 7 p.m. You don't know until the next morning. And I think that's something that really has continued in the pop punk industry. And I don't really see everybody else as the enemy. I see them as we can all go up together. And also, we learned that from Mark from Blink 182 when, you know, when we were first coming out, he sang on our record and did it for free. Didn't ask for anything in return just because he wanted to help us out. And we want to continue that as well, you know.
The reality is, you know, the reality
is, you know how
it's going to be. You're going to get on stage and, you know, we'll change nights, you know, who closes.
Yeah.
Once you see Sum 41, they're a kick-ass band.
Yeah, they
you
are.
Know, once you see Sum 41, you know, you're going to up your game, you know. They're
really
good.
Of course.
And they're going to do the same, too. We're going to watch each other. And
I think it's going to keep us on our toes.
And
both
it's
going to
benefit, you know, the audience. There is going to be a healthy competition. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. They're a kick-ass band, you know.
There are some places around the world that I'm still shocked that we have so many awesome fans. Like, I think of, like, Southeast Asia and even South Africa and Brazil, Argentina. I know a lot of friends of mine, you know, they go on vacation somewhere, and it's like my buddy was in Bali, and he's like, I can't get away from you. Summer Paradise is playing in the bar that I'm drinking here, you know. And that's it's something that we really cultivated early on in our career. We went on tour a lot internationally. Yeah. And back then, not a lot of bands did that. A lot of American bands, there was so much touring at the time, and people made money off record sales. People didn't tour that much. And we were sort of the frame of mind of like, let's go everywhere. Let's go to all over Europe. Let's go to Eastern Europe. Let's go to Southeast Asia, Australia. And we did that early on. And that really created a bond with those people that didn't have that many shows, you know. And over the years, when we go back to the Philippines or Malaysia, Indonesia, all that place, we'd go there. And then 10 years later, we'd see like, oh, there's posters for this band's coming over. This band's coming over.
Yeah.
That band's coming next week. And they had more shows. But at the beginning, when we did it in 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, we were one of the only ones. It was Linkin Park. It was us and the Pussycat Dolls. We were like the three bands that
the Black Eyed Peas. Yeah.
And we'd see them everywhere, and we were like the few bands that would hit those places. And it really created something great, I think, for us around the world, Australia and all those places.
Thanks for taking the time, guys.
Of course. Thank you. Appreciate it.